Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Welcome you to our presentation. This is non-applicable clauses, permissible exclusions, exemptions, developing a better understanding of what can and cannot be excused in an audit assessment. My name is Joseph Krolikowski, and I am the QMS program manager for Perry Johnson Registrars. Our topics for today, we're going to be addressing what are non-applicable clauses, what does that term mean? We're going to review what high-level requirements apply to this topic. We're going to do a little bit of a dive into the idea of outsourcing. We're going to review some historical aspects of how this was approached in ISO 9001:2008, and also how it's currently approached in ISO 9001:2015. We'll have a little bit of review on the impact of a limited scope in the area of non-applicable clauses, a couple of concluding remarks, and then your questions. Now, for our presentation today, we're going to be examining these concepts as they are addressed in ISO 9001:2015. Now, this whole concept of non-applicable clauses, this appears in many other standards. We see it in AS 9100, IETF, ISO 1345, but there are typically going to be sector-specific requirements in those cases. Now, PGR does offer webinars on these three standards and many others. We do invite you to review our website for further information on when those presentations are going to be offered again. So let's begin with what are non-applicable clauses. Well, the term non-applicable clause is rooted in the terminology that's found in section 4.3 of ISO 9001:2015, where it states that the organization's scope needs to state the types of products and services and provide justification for any requirement of this international standard. And of course, they're referring to ISO 9001:2015. That the organization determines is not applicable to the scope of its quality management system. Now, clause 4.3 goes on to say that the scope statement needs to be maintained as documented information. In other words, you have to have this established in some officially documented format, whether that is a quality manual or some other means. And within that scope statement, you have to define what the non-applicable clauses are and justifications therein. Now, in the 9001:2008 standard, the term that was used was permissible exclusions, and the context for it was very similar. If you read section 1.2 from the older standard, it stated that where any requirement of this international standard cannot be applied, due to the nature of an organization and its product, can be considered for exclusion. Other part of ISO 9001:2008, section 422A, stated that any exclusions and justifications had to be documented within a quality manual. Obviously, a quality manual is no longer compulsory under ISO 9001:2015. So for our presentation today, I've chosen to use the term exemptions. It's succinct, and it addresses the idea raised in both permissible exclusions and non-applicable clauses. So again, for the duration, we're going to be referring to them as exemptions. Now, for an exemption to be truly justified, over the whole course of time that this has been applicable within ISO 9001. It has to be something that is not part of your quality management system as defined by the scope. Let's dig a little deeper and get a better sense of understanding this requirement. To begin with, it's helpful to recognize that there are numerous high-level requirements that apply to this issue. We have guidance, for example, from the TC-176 committee. This is the committee that wrote ISO 9001 in both its 2008 and 2015 revisions. We have important guidance from the ISO 9001 Auditing Practices Group, or APG. This is a joint effort from both the ISO and the IAF. We obviously have content within ISO 9001:2015 itself, both auditable content and guidance content. And finally, we have ISO TS9002. This is the guidance standard for implementation of ISO 9001:2015. I'd like to start our review of the high-level guidance with some historical documents, the TC-176 committee position papers. Now, back in October 2008, shortly after ISO 9001:2008 was published, the committee issued a couple of officially binding guidance documents. These were titled Introduction and Support, Guidance on ISO 9001:2008 Clause 1.2. You may remember that's where exemptions are discussed. So that's committee document 524R6. And then Guidance on Outsource Processes, that's committee document 630R3. Now, the two of these documents together proposed a requirement, an interpretation really, that at the time was rather controversial. And what was so controversial was the following. First, from committee document 524R6, situations where conformity to ISO 9001:2008 should not be claimed include where an organization excludes a requirement on the basis that the activity has been outsourced. And then from 630R3, the intent of Clause 4.1 is to emphasize that when an organization chooses to outsource, whether permanently or temporarily, a process that affects product conformity, it cannot simply ignore this process nor exclude it from the quality management system. So in other words, any exemption rooted in outsourcing is not an acceptable exemption, and it should result in a non-conformance during the audit process. Now, this is guidance from the committee that wrote the standard itself. There really is no getting around this guidance. Now, obviously, the elephant in the room with this is design. PJR has been a certification body, obviously, for many years. And in the past, we had lots of clients that excluded design and development on the basis that designs were being given to them by a parent or sister company. In other words, the design was not being performed in the facility that we were auditing. Now, those exemptions are potentially not appropriate, and they definitely should not have been automatically accepted. I'll be giving you a little clarification on that a little later in the presentation. In order for design to be justifiably exempted, essentially you need to fall into one of two situations. Either you are receiving a complete product design from your customer, whether the customer is developing it themselves or having it done for them, or you do not manufacture products based on a product design. So this would be warehouses, distributorships, etc. There is a third option that we'll be exploring just a bit later in the presentation. Now, one of the more common responses that we get from both auditors and clients who get frustrated over this is, how can PJR audit something I don't do in my building? Now, it's important to remember that we're not auditing the actual activity itself. We are auditing the outsourcing controls that are being applied. And with that, I'd like to do a more thorough exploration of what outsourcing is all about. And we'll begin with the definition for outsourcing given in the ISO 9000 Fundamentals and Vocabulary document. Outsource is defined as to make an arrangement where an external organization performs part of an organization's function or process. Now, it's important to note the phrase the organization's function or process. What that means is that the organization still has ownership, still has responsibility for that function or process, even if it isn't done in the facility, within the building, so to speak. And that's actually further emphasized in the note that appears right after the definition. The note reads, "An external organization is outside the scope of the management system, but the outsourced function or process is within the scope." That's a very key distinction. So, what are some things that are commonly outsourced? Well, I suspect many of you on the call today recognize one or more things that you outsource to outside providers. Calibration, probably the most common outsourced activity. Training, right? What you're doing right now is a form of outsourced training. Customer service or order entry, design, as we've indicated, purchasing, manufacturing, even product testing and non-conforming product disposal. These are all very common forms of outsourced processes that we see. So, how was outsourcing discussed in ISO 9001:2008? Well, there was a specific clause for it, section 4.1, where it stated that where the organization chooses to outsource any process that affects product conformity, the organization shall ensure control over such processes. Now, in ISO 9001:2015, that verbiage was modified a bit, and it was moved to section 8.4.1, excuse me, where it states that the organization shall ensure that any externally provided processes, products, and services conform to requirements. It's important to note that this whole idea of external providers, this represented a merging of concepts that were formerly separate in ISO 9001:2008. So the ideas of suppliers and outsource providers and so forth, this was all merged under one heading, external providers. Now there is actually an annex note that's given in ISO 9001:2015, Annex A8, where it states that all forms of externally provided processes, products, and services are addressed in 8.4, whether through arrangement with an associate company or outsourcing processes to an external provider. So right within the standard itself, they are making the point that this can be an associate company, a parent company, a sister company, and so forth. Now, outsourcing is also discussed in a couple of other key places. The 9002 guidance standard states that external providers could include corporate headquarters, or associate companies, or suppliers, or someone to whom the organization has outsourced a process. And the Auditing Practices Group weighed in on this in their guidance document called Scope of ISO 9001, which states that outsourcing is to be considered an input in the development of an organization's scope. So remember, when we are auditing an outsourced activity, we're not really auditing the activity itself, but rather we are confirming that appropriate controls have been established. That's a key distinction. So what do we mean by controls? What constitutes a satisfactory control for an outsourced process? Well, a lot of familiar items, a lot of different ways that it can be accomplished. I mean, the obvious ones would be things like contracts and purchase orders, but even something like email communication or terms and conditions listed on a website can constitute a form of outsourcing control. You could even do things like external provider audits, giving them work instructions, and so forth. Our auditors will review your tactics, so to speak, and make an informed decision on whether they're effective or not. So for example, let's consider the case of a company that outsources their calibration verification activity for their gauges to an outside laboratory. Our auditor could potentially review the contract that you've issued to the calibration laboratory. They're going to review, obviously, the calibration records that are issued by that calibration laboratory and any gauge labeling that's been applied by the calibration laboratory. Now, you'll note that none of that equivocates to a review of the actual calibration verification activity. Now, in this scenario, none of the clauses from ISO 9001:2015 that pertain to calibration or verification, all found in Section 715, would be claimed as an exemption. They're not an exemption. This is an activity that's being done, albeit somewhat through outsourcing. Now, one thing that we have trained our auditors to do, and we do this when we do an executive committee review of a completed audit package as well, is we are looking very carefully at client websites. Now, hopefully you'll remember that a website is admissible as audit evidence. So what are we looking for when we review a website? Well, first, we want to make sure that the website appropriately reflects the organization's scope. And additionally, we want to make sure, is the website referencing design activity, especially if the organization is classified as no design. Now, if we are noting design on an organization's website and they have been classified as no design, we are in all cases reaching out to the organization to try to find out why and get an explanation for the discrepancy. And the explanation that we get typically falls into one of a few categories. They may be telling us that their corporate office is actually providing the design. Now, obviously, we've learned that that is not acceptable in terms of design being excluded. It's absolutely acceptable for corporate to provide design, but not if it means the organization is going to claim design as an exemption. We're also occasionally told that no design is currently being done, but this is a marketing effort to try to attract new customers. PJR, obviously, we understand the desire to grow a business. But unfortunately, this is not acceptable either. Your website and your design classification do have to be aligned with each other. Once in a while, we'll run into a situation where we're told that any designs that are being used are very old, 30 to 40 years old in some cases. It has come up in a couple of cases, and most of the time, what we do is we definitely leave the organization as design responsible, but we try to make concessions in terms of the audit time. Now, there are some possibilities for exemptions that are rooted in what we call a limited scope. Now, the majority of our clients, their intent is for their entire operation to be included in their certification, all the things that they're doing. Once in a great while, we will have a client that wants to have a limited scope, whether this is for financial or for other reasons. Now, where that is the case, it is possible for a portion of the standard to be considered for exemption that wouldn't have been possible in a full scope situation. So here's an example of how that might work. Let's say that we have an organization that manufactures clothing for industrial markets and for commercial markets. For this example, we're going to assume that there are two primary product lines. They're doing leather goods for industrial applications and polyester goods for commercial applications. Now, you may recall that ISO 9001:2015 has warranty provisions in clause 855. So let's assume in our example here that the organization offers warranty returns on their commercial products, but not their industrial products. Now, if this company chooses to only pursue ISO 9001 certification for their industrial product line, it's possible, not definite, but possible that they'll be able to claim a full or partial exemption from Clause 855. So what is supposed to happen if an inappropriate item is being claimed as an exemption? Well, the most appropriate result is going to be a nonconformance. Now, we've looked already at what the typical clause numbers would be for this. Now, if you are assessed a nonconformance for an exemption or anything else, you do have the right to dispute and appeal the auditor's decision. That process is discussed in our Procedure Pro 10, which is available for download anytime right on our website. Now, back in 2017, we rolled out a new certification option for clients who received some or all of their product designs from a parent or affiliate company. Now, that option is referred to as full design outsourced. So, any company that is classified as full design outsourced is going to have one of a couple things that are going to be done. The audit time potentially is going to be calculated in exactly the same manner as what we would do for a no design classification. We'll be giving clarification on that in a few slides. Any organization that is classed as full design outsourced must not claim any part of design as an exemption. All of those requirements are considered applicable in a full design outsourced arrangement. And the certificate that is issued to that client has to address the design activity, either by stating it's part of the system or by acknowledging that it is outsourced. Now, when we rolled out our new full design outsourced classification, we actually reached out to the ANAB to make sure that we had their buy-in on this process. Now, ANAB indicated that they felt what we were doing was appropriate, but they emphasized that controls must be applied to outsourced processes and that those controls had to be included in the audit process. So some excerpts from what we were told by the ANAB at the time. First, the complexity, activities, and risks that are present due to an outsourced provider of processes, products, or services need to be controlled or confirmed, as discussed in ISO 9001 Section 8.4. And also, Section 8.4 has many requirements that apply to the organization and have to be confirmed or evaluated by the certification body when certifying an organization that has outsourced products, processes, or services. Now, ANAB went on to say that they strongly object to any automatic audit time reductions regarding product design status. And they state, the certification body is required to clearly, effectively, and realistically justify and document justifications for any adjustment, whether it be an increase or a decrease, from the established audit day tables. And the reference that's given here is to the IAF Mandatory Document 5. So in other words, PJR cannot initially reduce audit time simply because you've been classified as full design outsourced. What needs to happen is an on-site auditor needs to look at your system and give us assurance that the controls being applied to the outsourced design activity are mature, effective, and can be assessed in the future without added audit time. So we now have four classification options pertaining to design status. So I'd like to go over what those options are on the next several slides here. We have full design. This is an organization that is responsible for the design of at least one of the products that they manufacture. Obviously, all sections in Clause 8.3 are applicable for companies that are classified in this manner. We have no design. This is an organization that receives all designs from their customers or otherwise does not interact with process designs. In this case, all parts of Clause 8.3 are claimed as not applicable. Now, if an organization is receiving product designs from parent or affiliate companies, but does not have responsibility for product design and is not advertising or otherwise representing that they are responsible for product design, they may also qualify for classification as no design. We also have a classification option entitled partial design. This is an organization that is providing technical input, review, verification, or other design services to their clients, but typically without responsibility for final design approval. We have few clients that are classified in this manner at this time. Where this is the case, portions, but not all, of Clause 8.3 are going to be claimed as not applicable. So some requirements will apply, some will not. And then we have our newest option, full design outsourced. This is for any organization that receives all or some of product designs from parent or affiliate companies and otherwise represents that they are responsible for product design activity. All sections of Clause 8.3 are applicable for any company classified in this matter. So in conclusion, PJR wants to ensure that our audit process is value added for our clients and addresses all applicable requirements. Making sure that exemptions are justified is an important part of this process. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of our other webinars. We have ISO 9001 2015, an introduction to the world's most popular standard. This is a kind of an overview of the standard and provide some insights on its key concepts. We have a presentation entitled Statutory and Regulatory Requirements, Anticipating Expectations within a Quality Management System Audit. This is a deep dive into what's going on with statutory and regulatory and how it's approached within an audit. And we have a variety of other topics. We cover process mapping, stage one auditing, and the standards that you see listed here and more. If you'd like to be kept informed of the latest news automatically, the best way to do that is to visit our website at www.pjr.com. If you go to the bottom of the page, enter your email address and click subscribe, you will be opted in for news updates and other points of helpful information. I do thank you for your time today. I hope you have found the presentation to be helpful. At this time, I'm going to go ahead and unlock the question portion of the dashboard and see if anyone has any questions today. Okay. Brian Lee is asking, so if we are controlling and monitoring external providers, processes and services, does this mean we are controlling outsourced services? Yes, that is what that would mean. Yes, sir. Dan Watson asks, what if an organization receives product designs from an external customer, yet still conducts tooling design internally to manufacture the customer's product design? Dan, as long as the tooling is not part of your overall scope, in other words, if the tool is not considered a product to the customer, you would probably be safe to remain no design classified. Kristen Brisch asks, if our products have already been designed, does this mean we have to go back and document all design activities or just upcoming changes? Kristen, historical designs typically are exempt from the requirements in terms of records and so forth. For a company that's newly implementing ISO 9001, obviously design changes and things of that nature would need to be recorded in the appropriate fashion. Dr. Ayman Eshra asks, can we say calibration validation instead of calibration verification? Is there a difference? There is a difference in to the extent that verification is the term that is officially used within ISO 9001. Those two terms both are defined within the ISO 9000 document, but verification is the term that's used in the standard. Nuria Aguilar asks, is calibration exempt? If you're asking, is calibration exempt to the extent that verification is exclusively done, those two are discussed side by side in the standard. One should be done. Verification should absolutely be done. Calibration, if the device is found to be in need of adjustment. Any other questions today?